Cricket, I love him to death. He's not fully potty trained still.
It's okay.
And it's okay.
He hits people longer.
Yeah, it's fine. I don't think he, you know, it's fine. But it's mostly if we're gone for too long. And like, whereas like Crumb will hold his pee, honestly, to like to the point where he shouldn't.
Yeah,
because he's just such a like, no, I couldn't. I'm not supposed to. Whereas Cricket, I think the moment he slightly has to pee, it's like, well, you're not here, so I'm gonna go. which, you know, that's fine. But this morning, he's really upped his pee placement in a way that I was like, this feels malicious and like sabotage.
Okay.
So we have one of those trash cans that you know, you press the button with your foot to open. And he peed on the button. And there's just enough of an indent
that was intentional.
Right.
That was on purpose.
There was a pool of pee so that when I clicked the button with my socks on.
Oh, socks is actually worse than bare feet.
It's worse.
As well.
It's worse.
It's worse.
So then I just got a sock full of pee and I was like, this has to be intentional. This is...
Yeah, no, that's absolutely on purpose. So funny.
I was like simultaneously like so mad, but also like, that's funny. It's funny.
What did you do to annoy him? Like what?
I think I left the house for too long. It was like three hours. And he was like, well, I gotta go.
This is not acceptable, actually.
No.
That's so funny.
Yeah. So...
He has to have really got into like an awkward position as well.
Right?
Like, to aim so specifically.
Yes. It was just fully onto the button paddle. I was like, you didn't... It'd be one thing if it was like the side of the trash can, but he really had to center himself on that.
Yeah,
which is partially why I was a few minutes late to our record with our fabulous guest today, because I was cleaning pee off of myself.
Cleaning up pee off the paddle. That's a gorgeous segue,
Thank
though,
you.
Alexa. So our fabulous guest today is Jackie Rose, also known as JP Rose. She's an author and has many wonderful animals in her life. So I think we should just get right into it because we have such an excellent meaty chat for you.
Yeah, let's do it.
So today we are joined by the amazing author, Jackie Rose. Do you prefer Jackie Rose or JP Rose?
Oh, I go through different stages.
Okay.
Yes.
Because one is your like YA name and one is your adult fiction name.
Yes.
Listeners might not know this, but generally if an author writes both, they kind of have to change up their name a little bit.
Yeah, definitely because they're so different.
Yeah.
And I was just worried it might merge into one. You wouldn't want that. So, yeah.
Yeah. All the the teenagers reading your like crime and stuff.
Yeah. Most people call me Jack, so that's
amazing. Well, thank you for joining us, Jack. We're so excited to have you.
Yeah.
Obviously, you are a very celebrated best-selling author. You've written adult crime. What book? You're on book, what, number 15? Number 14?
16.
Book
yes,
number 16. 16.
For adults, yeah.
For adults. And then your YA, The Haunting of Tyrese Walker, was out last year, last October, and has done very, very well. Mm-hmm. Which is really exciting. Everybody go buy it and go read it. It's fantastic. But we aren't going to talk to you about your work today because this is Comfort Creatures and we talk about animals. So when I suggested to some writer friends, you know, I was like, oh, is anyone particularly into animals? Do you want to kind of come on the show? Jackie immediately was like, yeah, I've quite a lot of animals. And then you said my favorite word, horses, and I said, sold, done. So tell us first and foremost about the horses.
Oh my goodness. How long have you got? Well, I've got three geldings. Their names, of course, are so important.
Very important.
Apache, 16-1. He's a hunter cob. Mm-hmm. And he's a blacked and blue, gorgeous color. There's a bluey tint to his body, for his hair, whatever you want to call it. Yeah, he's gorgeous. And he used to be owned by a para dressage rider, which is amazing. I'll tell you more about that later. And then I've got Boo. He's just a sweet old cob, 14. And he's so sweet. He's so sweet. And he was, when I got him, I was actually looking for a sort of a sports, sort of hunter, sort of 16, 17 hands, you know, or maybe a thoroughbred.
Mm.
But then I saw him and he'd been really badly treated. Oh. And the owners knew I wanted him. And like for him, you probably would end up paying £500-600 if that. He was lame. He was 4/5 lame. So
oh my
he was
gosh.
Just, even the vet said, leave him. I was like, how could you say that? You know, because the vet said to me, you can't save them all. And I thought, no, but I could save him.
Yeah.
So, I dumped my vet, bought him. And because they knew I wanted him, they charged me £5,000 for him. And he's worth everything to me. But,
yeah,
you know, he's worth a few hundred pounds. And then I've got Monarch. And again, I did a
great
name. Monarch. He had been so badly treated because the horse world, I don't know if you know, Elle, I'm sure you do because you know horses, is not really policed how it should be.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, sort of the everyday animal world is difficult, but sort of the horse world is so like stuck years and years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And, you know, it's terrible. And people knew Monarch was being beaten. He was being really badly abused. He was a stallion. And people don't know how to look after stallions. They're afraid of them a lot of the time.
What do you mean? Is that because they're so spirited?
They're so spirited. And there's a famous saying, sort of, tell a gelding, right? Yeah, you tell a gelding because a gelding, for people who don't know, is a horse has been castrated, and so a lot of the time they're much calmer, they're less fiery, they're just I'll go here if you tell me to go here, I'll go there if you tell me to go there. So it's like tell a gelding, ask a mare, negotiate with a stallion, and that and that's what you have to do, and. There's a lot of dominance, and it's often there's a status symbol as well. Oh, I've got a stallion, and all this nonsense that comes with it. And because a stallion will challenge you and they will push the lines, people go into it like an old school, terrible mentality. Well, just a horrible mentality, not necessarily old school. And they'll, the first thing they do is they want to break the horse. They want to break the spirit so they can overpower it. So the first day this person had Monarch, they went into the stable and they beat it with a whip and over and over again for half an hour. And people don't do anything. And this person had it for a long time. And I used
how can
to
you do that? I literally can't fathom.
How could you do that?
How can you do that to another living thing? Like,
yeah, I
what?
God, no, I know. It's beyond. Terrible. And I used to say to the guy, you know, can I buy him off you? And he used to say, okay, you can have. Like for £50,000. Now I didn't have £50,000 to give it, so I used to break my heart. I said, "I'll give you £10,000. I'll give you £15,000, which is way over the odds. I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, he's a beautiful horse, but and he's like, no. And then what happened is the guy sort of dropped dead, and so I'd say nothing.
Like I don't want to say karma.
I mean, neither, but
also just that word, you know, he's sort of kind of dropped dead.
Yeah. Hey, that's how it rolls. And I got in touch with the family straight away, and I would say, please, can I have Monarch? Because by this time, Monarch had been neglected, not only abused, but neglected. He had laminitis, which is you know, is debilitating. He couldn't move. Is it painful? And what had happened is like his hooves, his fronts had, what happens with laminitis, if it's left untreated, sort of the soles of your hooves starts dropping and stuff. And then his bone had rotated. So it was going through the floor of his foot.
Oh my God.
And it was, and he was still a full stallion at that time as well. And nobody was going in or out with it. And it was going to cost a lot. And at first they were like, oh, we want to keep him to remember, you know, this person. I'm not sure why, but, you know. And eventually they, you know, said, okay, yes, okay, you can have him. And they gifted him to me, which, you know, is because he cost me enough of the vets, because obviously I had to get a vet to him. And it was right in COVID as well, with the beginning of COVID, which was really hard to get a vet out. And so we treated his laminitis. He had Cushing's as well, so he's on tablets for the rest of his life.
Why? I don't understand why anyone would buy a stallion. And like, you know, as you said, they're very expensive. They're a lot of care. Why would you buy a stallion to not, like, what was the point of him having this? Was it a pet? Was it a part of a riding school?
He showed a lot, because when you, there's a myth, I think it's a myth, and, you know, I do believe it's a myth, that when you cut a horse, like when you geld a horse, they sometimes lose some of their spring, part of their spring. They sometimes lose that shine of the coat. They sometimes lose that fire. So when they take them into the show ring, or they take them down the road, because he's a driving horse. He's a ride and drive, but more driving horse. You know, he's a Welsh D, cross Welsh D and Hackney. So he picks up his feet a lot. But sometimes when you stop making him a stallion, you know, that's lost by a few percent. I mean, who cares? But, you know, and also in this country, if you don't have, I mean, in Spain and stuff, they just let stallions go out with the geldings and stuff. It's no big deal. And in Europe, they do. But in this country, there's this sort of ideas that you can't let stallions out with geldings. I mean, you have to be careful, of course. But so a lot of them are boxed up. So Monarch was spending his life in a box. Right. So he was coming out.
Why can't you let stallions out with geldings? Because they're too alpha.
They're so, I mean, Monarch is still alpha. And sometimes I feel sorry for Boo and Apache. They go, ooh. But they are so alpha. I mean, if it's a mare, obviously they're going to cover a mare, because that's their natural inner instinct. They're
driven, of course,
by food and sex. So, so nobody wants to go to their field and suddenly there's a stallion covering their mess, so you have to separate. And then people are nervous of them. Sometimes they will really put geldings in their place, but not you know, mares do that as well. But I think it's how you bring them up. You know, it's how you bring them up. So people go into owning a stallion the wrong way. But I think it was all about status. It was all about what he looked like, because he is, you know, he is magnificent to look at. It was such a shame. But he had Cushing's, which was triggering the laminitis. And it's when you don't, you know, the spikes of sugar was affecting him, a bit like diabetes. And it was just one thing after the other. And he hadn't seen a dentist for years, and his feet, the hooves also were curving up. They were so long and stuff, and it was just a nightmare. So it took us about a year to get him better. My farrier was amazing, because farriers, vets are great, but farriers actually are the first port of call for lameness and for things like that. So yeah, now he was absolutely incredible. And then we gelded him.
That was going to be the next question.
Yeah, we gelded him in the field, because there's no way you could load Monarch up on a box. Nobody's going to do that. You know, he wasn't having that. And then a lot of vets wouldn't come out because A, was COVID, and B, it is a bit dodgy to, because he was 12 at the time, to geld an older horse. But there was this bet who has been since struck off.
Oh, gosh.
But who was really good, but he was, you know, I think he'd been taking too much ketamine himself. I mean, when he came along, he was all over the place. And but it took a 3 visits for him to be able to get near enough to inject Monarch.
Really?
Yeah, because Monarch was really terrified of men, especially, and he was head shy as well. And he was beaten around his head, so you can't even put a head collar. You couldn't put a head collar on him and stuff. So yeah, it wasn't easy at all. But it allowed. He had to have it done because then I could, you know, get him out into the fields. That was my idea to just for him to graze, you know, out in the fields. Even if he wasn't in a herd, I thought, fine, it doesn't matter, but I can't have him boxed up. And he was too old to be taught to, as a stallion, to his testosterone drive, you know, because there were his mares, because I'm on a private yard. I keep my horses on a private yard as a friend's. And so there's a small herd. And I thought, you know, he'd be jumping over, if he still kept a stallion, he'll be jumping over those fences
to get to the mares.
Maybe he will be happy with me. Because he could break their backs, or he could have his legs broken. It can be quite a violent scenario that happens and stuff.
Yeah.
But thankfully, the gelding went really well. I was really impressed with this guy who, like I say, who was out of it himself. But he kept going, let's give him more ketamine. He needs more ketamine. And then afterwards, he said he gave him enough ketamine, like for 4 horses. I was like, oh my God. And he said, it's a good job. He didn't, nothing happened. He said, because I forgot the oxygen. I was like, whoa.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yeah. And
thank God it all went okay.
And then obviously it was a precarious situation because the vet was like, well, see you around. And I could never get in touch with him again after that, really. Yeah. And so I was just left with this stallion who, you know, hadn't been out, who I was trying to build the trust, who was dripping with blood because obviously he'd have, you know, and that's what happens when they geld, especially when they're older, it bleeds a lot. And I'm like, I'm just going to clean your wound, Monarch. No? Okay. You know, and it's just like, not even a little bit? No, okay. I'll stand here right in this corner without moving.
Yeah.
So thankfully, he didn't have an infection. I did get antibiotics from another vet, which was great because, you know.
You've got nerves of steel. I would have had like 16 panic attacks by now. I'd have been like, I literally don't know what to do. You're so big and you're so strong and I just want to help you.
Yes, yeah, exactly. So it was like, oh my goodness. But I went down the road of clicker training, actually, because I'm so into positive reinforcement, because I have this thing about how much animals are powerless, you know, they really are. And, you know, even with riding, everything is about negative reinforcements in a way. So
I really agree with you on this one in a big way.
Yeah. I mean, you can't do it with Boo. Boo is greedy. And it's like you have your little bag of treats, you know, with your clicker and stuff. And Boo will just mug you for the whole lot. He's not interested. But, you know, Apache and Monarch are fantastic. And Monarch is probably the most intelligent horse I've ever known in my whole life. And he's also probably the most spirited and most soulful horse, because when he was being abused, he went into himself, but he still kept that part of him that had this heart, this still had the ability to trust, to have hope, to want to please. And I mean, you ask a lot of people and people go, no, that's not monarch. He's crazy. But he's not. You just have to find their language. That's mm-hmm. it. You know, because I was just talking, he was just talking. We had to find a communication. And eventually through this quicker training, and he was really, really quicker picking it up, especially as fear was what drove him most of his life. So he was happy to try, happy to trust, and happy to be brave. I mean, sometimes, you know, I'm sure he was just taking the pee because, you know, it's like I was going, because he was head shy, I couldn't get a head collar on for him. It took 3-4 months for him to accept me putting a head collar on him.
Wow.
So I used to have to, look, I'll put it on myself, Monarch, you know. And he used to look at me like this. And I'm walking about in front of the stable, look, Monarch, I've got this head collar on. And he's like, yeah, okay. Stupid humoured. Yeah, okay.
It's like, you know, you're trying to feed a baby vegetables and you eat them yourself. Yeah, like, it's delicious.
Exactly. exactly. So eventually, you know, he did let me, and that was like a real eureka moment. It was just like, wow, I did burst into tears.
Yeah.
Because it was about that line of he's actually trusting me. He's actually, you know, and even when I took him out, people used to say to me, you need to put sort of a big bit in his mouth, or, you know, something, tie a rope around his neck. Cause he's a, you know, even though he's not a stallion, he has stallion like tendencies and behaviors and stuff. And I was going, no, I'm not going to do that because I'm bitless. I'm bitless all the way.
Yeah.
I ride bitless, and, you know, because you don't actually need a bit. I say that if you're galloping up the road on a runaway horse, I might change my mind. I do change my mind. But actually, you know, you can ride a horse without a bit. And I thought, I'm not going to do that to him. And I'm not going to do all the stuff that he was used to. And every time I used to take him out of the stable, I was going, and people used to stand there, it's only a small yard, but they were going, go on there, Jack, let's watch you. I was going, Monarch, just do not show me up. you know, just let's walk without a problem. No rearing, no kicking, no nothing. And we just developed this amazing bond. And he is so clever that he can pick out colors as well. So he can pick out green, he can pick out orange.
Wow.
Which is really fantastic.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he also, learned to become friends with my two, because he never had friends in his life, it was fantastic. He had to be separated from the herd because he was really bolshy. So it's just like three over there and my three on the other side of the sort of the farm and stuff. Not that he's mean. He's just that if you want to go to get the other horses, he's like, no, you're not coming to get my herd. You know? And then people go, no, I need to get my horse. He goes, okay, well, come through me first. People go, no, actually. Yeah. So, he has his quirks and stuff, and you've got to be careful with his back legs because he likes to put in a kick if you're not careful in people. But he's the most amazing, and he's taught me a lot about myself. He's taught, you know, and we've built a great bond together. But he wasn't planned. I only planned to have one horse.
How did you? Yeah, so your three horses, do you ride them all? Do they ride in a school?
I haven't ridden Monarch. And I keep thinking I'll have to ride you one day. But I think probably driving him, that's why, you know, I sort of started driving lessons. Because he hasn't been ridden for, I don't know, probably 10 years. And I'm thinking, do I really want to do that? No. So, he knows his job, driving and stuff, but, you know, and driving's pretty easy as long as the horse knows what they're doing. And Monarch really knows what he's doing and stuff. So I just have to become more confident. You know, I can drive a little pony. That's no problem. But he's a strong beast. So I think before I do a little little house on the prairie up the road and off the edge of the cliff. I think I need, you know, a bit more practice on a pony, with a pony. And Boo, I used to ride, but he doesn't like his job. He's like, nah, I'm not keen on it. I'll go and graze if you don't mind.
Yeah.
I'll stop here if you don't mind. I mean, if on a hack, he's fine. You know, he enjoys that. But he's not one to go into the school, the menage.
It's a particular like temperament of horse as well that can handle the school.
Yeah, exactly. He's just like, nah. So you show him the bridle, he goes, no. And he's back with you and then just put his head in his corner and you feel so bad for him. They go, okay. You know. Whereas Apache, he loves his job. And he needs his job. He, like I say, he was a sort of para dressage horse. Mm-hmm. And it was funny when I got him, because the lady who had him since he was a baby, since he was a foal. And she wanted to go much further. She wanted to compete for the Olympics. And he could only get to a certain level in a way. And her disability was affecting her more and more. So her legs, you know, even though he's 16'2", her legs, and she was a tall lady, her legs were sort of really straight because of her disability. So she couldn't sort of do the stuff that she needed to do with her legs, yield to give over the, you know, to, you know, and all the things you do in dressage. So when she first got him, she had much more flexibility in her legs. So that was another reason why she sort of got rid of him. But her disability was mainly on her left side. So you don't get marked down. I think that's how it goes in, you know, if you have, depending on your disability. So if you can't do certain movements to the left, if you're on the left and stuff, but she wanted to do both sides. Oh. So she taught him to do all the stuff through a whistle. So, so he knows whistle commands and stuff, but unfortunately I've got veneers, so it's hard to whistle. And, but you know, so sometimes when I used to have my lessons with my instructor, He's much weaker on his left side because he wasn't built up so much. Even though she did a lot on his left, he wasn't so built up on his left-hand side. So his shoulder, he was always falling in. So, you know, I had to sort of push him over and all that. And sometimes, because he's heavy, I'm thinking on my leg, because I feel like I'm holding him up. Oh. And so in the end, I used to whistle when she wasn't watching. And he used to do all these stuff, and that's, he was going, that's it, well done. That's it. Yeah. So yeah, no, he's very, very clever, and he loves his job. He has to have his job, otherwise he gets bored.
And is that just riding with you, or is he in a school, or how does it work?
He likes school. He likes to go to shows, though at the moment I'm not riding because I'm writing a couple of important books. I think I don't want to go. Oh, by the way, publishers, I've got a broken wrist and you know, I can't do it. So he's got time off at the moment. But I love the groundwork. The groundwork's fun because I taught him to play football, which is a through clicker. So that's so much fun to do. But I spoke to a lady who used to train dolphins, and she taught me how to do the clicker. Yeah, she's a lady in the States. And she trained dolphins. So I used to sort of send her questions. What would you do if this? What you know, because obviously with dolphins, it's all positive
reinforcement.
So it's fun. I mean, horses run through me completely. I mean, I can't, some days I can imagine life without a horse. Definitely when it's cold, when I'm tired, when I've got short time. But in general, I couldn't imagine life without a horse.
Wow.
For our non-horse listeners, when you say driving a horse, is that literally like hitching them to a wagon or a carriage?
Yes, okay, yes, great. I love that. Yeah, it's a cart. Wagon sounds cooler though. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, okay. it's great to learn actually, because especially if you get older and older and older. I mean, you know, when you maybe when you're 70, 80, you might not be able to get on a horse.
Right.
Some people do. That is the great thing about horse riding. Not only do you compete against men, it's probably one of the only sports that you do compete against men, but also a lot of people are still riding and competing, top competitions in their 70s.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the Queen was on her horse really soon up until when she died, like really late in the day.
Exactly.
Like, I swear, even the Christmas before, people at Windsor said she would like potter about Windsor grounds on her horse.
Wow. Yes, you know. You just need the right horse.
Yeah,
exactly. I think.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I'm not sure if you could potter with Apache. Yeah. But yeah, driving a carriage is so relaxing, and it's a family affair as well, because you can just put, you know, four people in your carriage, five people, six.
Such a nice day out. I love
it. Such a nice day out.
Yeah.
It's a strange thing, because when you're driving the carriage, because I'm used to riding, I'll do my hand movements will be for riding, and it makes no difference to a driving horse at all. Like, you know, because or I'll be looking that side, because obviously when you ride, if you turn your body or turn your head, the horse should turn with you.
Right.
So depending on the sensitivity. So like with, with Boo, you'd have to turn his whole body to move to the right. But you know, with Apache, say, you can just turn your head to the right and he'll turn that way because he's so sensitive because of the way he was trained. But with, obviously, with carriage driving, you're going like this and then they're just going straight. You know, but yes, it's really fun, but it's odd because they're so far ahead of you that sometimes if you think about it too much, you think, oh, I'm out of control here. I'm in this carriage. There's actually no brake on this carriage. and he's deciding he's on his toes because a bit of wind has frightened him and he's, you know, going, because my instructor for who taught me to drive, said, you don't want to drive with a carriage with a brake because you'll rely on it. And I'm like, yeah, that's fine.
So we're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back with more from Jackie Rose.
Carrying three beef and dairy all day.
Max Fun Drive. Hey, chef, we got another one.
Another Max Fun Drive. People know it's the best time to support the shows they love. You tell them how Meetup Day is back?
Sure did. They wanted to know about the live streams, though.
Those are finishing up right now. We can even send one out on the first night, March 20th.
March 20th, chef!
I'll give them a heads up. They also wanted the limited time thank you gifts for new and upgrading members.
Yep, and we got some fresh episodes ready to go too.
Hot stuff coming through.
All right, we got exciting live streams, Meetup Day, fresh episodes, limited time gifts. Oh, and BOCO.
Yeah, okay, let them know that Max Fun Drive 2023 will be ready on March 20th, and it'll only be 2 weeks.
2 weeks, chef!
Max Fun Drive starts on March 20th for just 2 weeks. No problem.
Order up!
Shoot, I forgot their water.
And now, a live reading from Rachel's Poetry Corner.
Elephants Theremin's Clifton, Neopets Porstrips Jepson, Hindsmell Jellybeans Goligoles, Skittles Squirrels and the Mole, Celery Chopsticks Pumpernickel, A Case of You by Joni Mitchell, Lullabies Tie-Dye The More You Know, all of these things on our wonderful show.
All these things and more wait for you on Wonderful every Wednesday on MaximumFun.org or wherever you download podcasts.
And how did you, like, did you grow up with horses or did you just as an adult kind of take an ocean?
Yeah, it was one of those things a long time ago because I'm very old. I grew up back in the day, I was adopted basically, and I was brought up in Yorkshire, and with white parents who are amazing. But the where I was living, this tiny village, I was the only kid of color, and you know, it really wasn't a healthy outlook people had. And the first time I ever rode was I used to hail the country bus, and they never used to stop, or used to stop and they would go, no room for you. And I was like seven and wow. stuff like that. And but there was a local farmer, and he saw it once. He said, you know, what you want to do is not use the book bus, love. You need to ride, you know, try a horse. I got pony in field if you want to. And I said, really? And he showed me this horse, and it was called Wild Sun. And when you imagine a Wild Sun, you imagine like some stallion, yeah. you know, rippling. You
yeah,
know,
mane blowing of, in the wind.
Yeah. But he was this tidy cob, like 13 hands, maybe 12 hands. And he was filthy because he was kept outside in the field. But to me, he was everything. Oh. And, you know, he was so well trained in the sense that he wasn't spooky. So because he was outside, he didn't jump for bicycles or cars or the wind or, you know, and the farmer just said, oh, just you could just come as much as you like and try to learn to ride. So I just sort of taught myself to ride, and I just fell in love with him. And
that is wild.
My everything. Yeah.
You taught yourself to ride?
Yeah. Well, I was thinking, how hard can it be? You know, I'd seen High Chaparral. I'd seen all the cowboy movies.
Yeah, but without even like YouTube to help you.
Yeah, nothing. It was just like, you know, I mean, the farmer showed me how to put the saddle on, but it wasn't even a complicated saddle. It was just basically like a numnar, a saddle pad. And I think he'd sewed himself the straps on it. And then it was a head collar. So it wasn't even a bridle.
Yeah.
So, and at the time I didn't realize that you should really ride with, you know, the whole thing, Chopin, but it was just, yeah. He was just amazing. I mean, I fell off a lot, broke a few ribs a few times. I didn't care, you know. Yeah. That's all I could think about, because it was the first time I kind of felt accepted by, you know, this creature who this total sort of messy, filthy creature. But, you know, he used to sort of neigh when he saw me. He used to come up to me, and I just felt completely accepted. You know, because I had a dog and I love my dog, but I always felt he betrayed me, because he always used to go and play with the people who were racist, football. And I was so brokenhearted.
Yeah.
You know, because it was like, because where we live, like dogs were sort of roaming around and stuff. And Samson was a really strong dog. And he used to, even though we had a really huge sort of grounds and gardens where, you know, he always used to want to potter off. So he used to dig holes and then go under the wall and then just go find something to do. And I always found him on the school playing fields, playing football with all these racists, all these kids. They're so horrible to me. Oh. And I used to be heartbroken.
Yeah.
His Wild Son. Whenever I saw him with the kids coming up to like the wall and stuff, he'd move away. He'd think, yes,
yeah, he has my back.
Yeah.
Wow.
So from there, I started riding lessons, jumping, which I loved, used to hack, used to ride bareback, which was fun. And I used to do that. I did that, for years, until sort of I came down to London. And then when I was probably, I went to drama school when I was 17, 18. And that was the first time I sort of hadn't had horses in my life. That was really difficult. I didn't know what was going on. I just felt this loss. I felt that I wasn't grounded. I felt completely at odds. It was the first time I hadn't had you know, animal companions in my life. And that was really difficult. So the, you know, at the first opportunity I had, I got a dog, and I rescued a bird. Cockatoo.
Cockatoo. Yeah.
Shout all the time. Yeah, just words, just random words, that was funny because I'm not into sort of birds in cages at all. Mm-hmm. But there was just a notice because somebody rescued this bird, or it's going to die, basically, you know. So yeah, I just called these people up, and they was just like, "Here you go. Here's the cage. Here's the cockatoo." And there you go. That was it.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah.
And did you have that cockatoo for the rest of its life? Or
yeah, I mean, rest of its life until it flew out of the window.
Oh my gosh!
Yeah, but it was really poor. I do feel that he went to die somewhere, you know, because he was like getting really old, and it was funny. And I do think there was like changing lanes because he used to always sit on my shoulder and just chatter and nibble my ear and stuff, but he didn't look very well, looking really poorly. And I was pregnant then. And I remember, you know, he was just like, whoa, that morning and stuff. And then he wouldn't normally fly out, and I wouldn't normally have the window open more than sort of a couple of inches. But suddenly he looked like he was young again, and he soared through the sitting room in circles. Then he saw this window, and he sort of flatlined through the window, sort of flattened all his body that he would never usually do, and flew out. And I was going, no, you know. And then I went into labor, and I had my daughter on the same changing lanes. Yeah.
Wow.
So yeah, but I was devastated.
That's very Phoenix like, though.
Yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
The whole cycle of life.
Exactly. You know.
Oh, what was your what was his name? The cockatoo.
Barry.
That's great.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't.
Perfect.
I think it's a perfect name.
It's really
Barry.
Good.
So good. Yeah. I don't know what I was expecting, but it wasn't Barry. It's really good.
Yeah, no, it wasn't Barry. That's so good. And so you said you got a dog, so you've had dogs as well. And
yeah, I grew up with dogs. I love dogs. I used to hate going on holiday because my dog couldn't go with me, because we used to go abroad. So my mom used to say to me, "You ruined every holiday for us, because all you used to do is sit there worried." Because in those days there was no mobile phones, no Zoom to be able to, "Can you just show me if my dog's all right?" So we used to go abroad for 6 weeks. And yeah, you know, all over Europe and stuff. And for some people that would have been amazing, but for me, it was just every day was a day away from my dog. And I just could, oh my gosh. And then my mom used to say, you used to cheer up the last 3 or 4 days because you knew that was the countdown.
That's so cute.
Yeah. So I had Samson, who's my betrayer, who betrayed me for a long time. But I loved him. I loved him so much. I mean, he dragged my nana down the churchyard, bless her, because my nana was, how old was my nana at the time? 80 or something. And we had gone out. And Samson, like I say, he was a really strong dog. He was a sheepdog, but he was a cross between something. I'm not sure what he was cross between, because he was a rescue dog. We'd got him as a puppy. But he was just complete meat and muscle on legs and stuff. And my nana thought, oh, I know what I'll do, love. I'll take him out for a walk. And we used to say, "Nana, whatever you do, don't take him out for a walk." You know, and what she did, she wrapped the lead around, around her wrist 2 or 3 times around her wrist.
Oh, God.
And Samson wasn't ever trained, because in those days, you just took a dog out and not, you know, to be sort of off the lead. I just had fun with them. It wasn't all these, you know. I mean, we did try to actually to take him to police training, but they asked us to leave because he was quite, so we didn't get very far with it. But she wrapped the lead around her wrist 2 or 3 times. And the minute you open the front door, Samson used to go, boof, gone.
Yeah.
And he just took her and she just flew through the air, basically. And then we used to have like a ditch, sort of like a river stream, and he went through the river stream.
Oh, no.
The other side, and, you know, a frail little old lady,
Nana.
You know,
being
turned, you know, all the... And then all the way through the grounds. So our grounds was probably about 2 acres, all the way through the grounds, all the way through into the graveyard. And she was found at the bottom of the graveyard, just lying there, all bruised and cut, with stabs that just go, what's up? What's the problem? You know, and thankfully she didn't break anything or, you know, but I mean, he was just the most amazing dog. He was the most amazing dog, so much personality. I used to also volunteer in the kennels, to work in the kennels, and I used to love that. I hated the cleaning out of them, but it, you know, if I cleaned out, then I could take them for a walk, so I used to love that. And then I used to foster dogs, you know, randomly, which you know, always upset me because I used to fall in love with them. Mm-hmm. I could never separate. Then as I got older, I rescued a couple of whippets.
Love whippets.
Yes. Yeah. But they were really poorly and they were quite old. So they didn't last long, which broke my heart. You know, I just sort of retreated to bed and it's very difficult to get up for a couple of weeks. And then I didn't have a dog for a while, as you know, but then eventually I did. And now I've got Honeyboo, who's a cockapoo. She's 11. Oh. And this is my first foray into cats. I've got two Sphinx.
Wow.
Oh,
Mabel and
Mabeland.
Mabel Moon and Myrtle. I also had guinea pigs who were the best friends with Honeyboo, actually. They were gorgeous, but they passed away within a week of each other.
Yeah.
Yeah. Lucy and Minnie. They get really
bonded to each other, don't they?
They really do. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But they were eight or nine, yeah. And they were great. And then I thought, okay, maybe, you know, people kept going on about cats. And I had never felt that affinity towards them. Every other animal, but not cats. But then I thought, oh, well, maybe. And then I started looking and reading about them. And I thought, and I don't usually buy any of, I mean, I've bought my horses, obviously.
Sure.
But it's not the first, my first thing is to get a rescue. But because my boys, they have a bit of asthma and stuff, I thought it wouldn't be fair. Yeah, that's why I have Honeyboo, because she's cockapoo and shed and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I thought, okay, I'll get a Sphinx, and I did. I got Mabel, and absolutely amazing, because they're very much like dogs.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. And Honeyboo loves them, but she's not bothered. She was not bothered. And I felt, well, this is not fair for Mabel to just be on her own, because I had imagined them running around together and playing together. And Honeyboo's like, whatever, you know. And so I had to go and get another one. So it's her half sister, Myrtle. Well, it's not her half sister. She's just a different litter. A few months later, or have a, yeah, it was 9 months, 10 months later, mm-hmm. 11 months, yeah. And they
and do they amazing. Get on?
Oh my goodness, yes, they get on so much.
That's so cute.
Yeah, they just amazing. And because everybody said, because I thought, you know, I'm so busy, I can't have anything else, you know, because I've got three kids, I've got three horses, I've got, you know, I volunteer for a pet bereavement line, I've got my writing, this, so I can't have any more a sort of responsibility that will take any more of my emotional time. And then I thought, and people say, oh, yeah, very independent cats, but they're not. They're not.
It's a lie. It's a lie. It is a lie. It is such a lie.
It's a total lie. They need cuddles. They need to be rocked to sleep.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's Honey Boo. That's yeah. My son has ordered a takeaway, and that's Honey Boo. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, people, I think people think just because cats can fend for themselves that they should or that they like to. But no.
It is that they it's constant.
Yeah.
And I'm writing and they cry and they sit and you go, hey, is something matter? And they go, no, I just want to check in. And I was like, okay, but I was busy. I was on a sentence. Can you? Yeah. And it's just constant. And then in the evening they get tired. So they need to be rocked to sleep. Upside down. So they're on the back and they rock, you know, you've got two of them, you know. Yeah. It's absolutely constant. And I'm thinking of getting, have you seen where those old people have those bed cradles and the sheet goes over it so it doesn't rub on their legs? Because I'm thinking I'll have to get that because they always want to come over the duvet with me. Uh-huh. But I have to keep my legs, you know, sort of bent so they can come so they don't get suffocated by the duvet. Yes. So I'm thinking of, it's one of those sort of aid things that, you know, that's, I think you could get to that so he could just stay there permanently. Because if I don't let them under the duvet, they just sit by the side of the bed crying, which is not relaxing.
No.
So, but then, you know, they sort of will get sort of overheated or suffocated. I'm sure they'll get suffocated.
Yeah.
And I guess sphinx, because obviously they're hairless. Yes. So they do like a snuggled up situation.
Like a snuggle situation. Yeah. I mean, all this gas going up is not helping my bills because they need to keep warm and they like to keep warm, the energy bills. Yeah. I mean, because I've got this radiator and then I build a little tent over it so they can go underneath and they can you know, rock in it. But I've had my heating on 24/7 since September.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Exactly. For the cats.
For the cats. Yeah. Yeah.
Do they wear little sweaters?
They do wear sweaters. But when I go out, I don't like to leave them with a sweater on in case they get caught, you know, you know, and stuff, because they're always jumping about and stuff. But at nighttime, they have their little pajama sweaters on and stuff, you know.
So cute.
They're so clever. But and they last so long. They have a lifespan of like 20 odd years.
Yeah. I have a Bengal and they're also ridiculously clever and ridiculously long lifespans.
Yes.
And I remember when, and I kind of knew this, and then after we were like looking at this little kitten and I was like, we actually might have you when we're like in our late 40s. Yeah. We're going to have you for the next 20. Like you'll be the, like our kids, like you.
Yes, exactly. The kids will go to uni and you'll be here.
And I'll still have the cat.
Exactly. But it's such a responsibility, I think. But I think now, you know, because I'm looking for another, I'm looking for a puppy, actually a rescue puppy. And I think now, you know, my life is so imprisoned by these animals. I might as well get it more. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, it's just like.
Totally.
Just going on holiday, just going, you know, in the end, I just think, oh, I'll just stay here, you know. Because it's such a, you know, getting cat sitters, getting, because they would hate to go into a cattery and Honey Boo wouldn't understand. So it's just not, though Honey Boo comes everywhere with me. Don't you, Honey Boo? Yeah. She's looking at me now. Yeah. She goes everywhere with me because she's like 10 and stuff. And I think the older she's got, I mean, we've always taken her. But I think the older she gets, the less she likes being left on her own.
Yeah.
So she just, even if it is, she's in the car still, you know, she prefers that. So on the front seat, she's got a special made bed for her. I got a bed specially made for her. So it's all comfortable. So when we go to the stables and stuff, if it's raining and stuff, she doesn't want to get out. She'll just sit in her bed all comfortable and stuff. So we're talking about you.
That's so sweet. I do actually see what you mean. Like I have this as well. Cause like my cat goes in the cattery and she does, she's pretty happy there cause we've been doing it for a while with her, which is good. But you know, the rate, for example, of like having two cats is not that much more expensive. Yes. And I'm like, we may as well just like just keep accruing animals.
Yeah, exactly.
At this point, we have so much admin around
yes.
her.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. We may as well get a few more so it feels a bit more worth
Exactly. And they're so different, aren't they? Every single animal companion you have, just so different, yeah. you know.
Yeah.
And stuff. But and it is tough because, like I say, I do the voluntary... I trained as a pet bereavement support worker to volunteer because there was this time where this really tough guy that I used to know, who used to be a big gangster, came out of his house running, and he was like, "She's dead, she's dead." It's like, "Oh, who's dead? Who's dead?" And automatically, I thought he meant his wife, but he meant his dog.
Aww. Yeah.
And he was absolutely devastated. And everybody made fun of him because, like I say, this man had been in and out of prison for gangster-related stuff. But he walked around for sort of 6 months carrying his dog's lead and stuff, sitting on the bench where they used to go together and stuff. And I thought it just shows you how... you know, a dog, a cat can really, really affect you.
Yeah.
He got I can't remember the dog's name, but he got him stuffed.
Taxidermy.
Taxidermy.
Wow.
Exactly. Yeah. Which I think is amazing. I think I won that for, you know, I've been looking up.
It's a really interesting art form. Like,
yes, you know, you've got to get it right because I've seen some really
the bad taxidermy is so funny though.
Yeah, so it's like the eyes up here, it just does not look like the dog itself.
Yeah,
but his is not so bad. Yeah, I've been looking up because I think that's what I'd like. You know, when I'm looking up, Honeyboo's like, "What are you doing?"
No.
yeah. But yeah. And I said to the kids, you know, this is what I'm going to do. And you know, they're like, "Mom, please, no." You know, I know somebody who, well, I don't know them, but I saw they had taxidermied their horse. And it's such a great job. And I thought, I would love that.
Where would you put a taxidermied horse? Like in the hallway?
In the hallway.
In the bathroom.
In the sitting room. Yeah.
That is. So cool.
It's so cool.
That would be so cool.
Yeah. And it was a beautiful horse when it was alive, and a beautiful horse, a taxidermied. Yeah. I just saw it randomly in the papers and I thought, I want that. Yeah. That is absolutely perfect.
It is cool that, you know, it like in talking about pet grief and things like that, that it is being taken more seriously now because it's so painful, but also like it's opening up more options for what to do with your pets when they pass, because I feel like for so long, it's like, I don't know, find somewhere in the yard. And it's like, but I know, you want to honor them the same way you do with family members. And, you know, there are like so many cool different, like, you could do taxidermy, but also people that like make jewelry out of their ashes and all these cool things that are popping up. And it's like, it's so nice that that's being respected.
I think it's so important because love is love, grief is grief.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, it's just a dog or just a cat. It isn't. I mean,
it isn't.
You know, it devastates you.
Yeah.
The loss is so profound. And the emptiness people feel like they do a person is huge.
Yeah.
And like you say, it is great that people are taking it more seriously. I think there's more needs to be awareness, especially for employers and stuff and, you know, maybe time taken off because it's really difficult to struggle through, because one of the things that I used to take a lot of calls about were guys who used to work in the city or guys with really high up jobs who were really suffering because their cat had died or, you know, their rabbits had died and they had no one to turn to because they were supposed to be, I don't know, selling some huge deal like a bank or something.
Yeah.
And they were grief-stricken. And sometimes they said that they lied and they said that, you know, they said, oh, my cousin had passed.
Passed
because it was the only way that they could explain to their friends and their colleagues why they were, you know, sort of emotional wreck. And that's really hard.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is really, for sure. it's great that even a pet bereavement line that even exists mm-hmm. as a place yes. for people to go and be like validated in what they're going through and supported yes. and stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
Because
yeah,
it's such a specific kind of grief as well. Because like, and you know, not to compare the two because they're so different, but when a person passes, you're grieving them and you're grieving the relationship. But like, there's a level like a pet is so dependent on you. Mm. So there's always a level of like you feel responsible. Mm. And then on top of that, they're so innocent and like so pure.
Yeah.
Like just the loss of something that pure and innocent.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. It's such a hard thing to kind of reckon with because you're like, but you were just so sweet always. Like,
and even when
pets are naughty or mischievous.
Yes.
They're not being naughty and mischievous because they're like malicious because mm-hmm. they can't be malicious. Exactly. Do you know what I mean? Exactly. They're just doing it because they're hungry or scared or confused.
Yes.
So it just, the loss of something like that is when our rabbit died we were just like devastated.
It is devastating because it's unconditional, isn't it, their love.
Mm-hmm. They're unconditional.
And I think it is really tough, but I think what's even tougher is when a pet goes missing.
Yeah.
Because that, you know, unresolved grief is so difficult.
It's so difficult.
Because you feel guilt, will they come back? And, you know, it's not like if something happened to one of us, hopefully we could get to a phone box and call or phone box, that shows my age. and just call for help or speak to somebody about it. But they could just be lost and wandering around or being taken by somebody and you never know. And that's the hardest thing. And that's the hardest to find how to comfort somebody mm-hmm. because they'll, you know, ask a question. Do you think it'll be all right? What do you think has happened? How, you know, and it's, how can you say it's going to be all right?
Do you get people calling your line whose pets have gone missing? Is that a thing?
Yeah. And it's so difficult. And, you know, there's quite a few people that sort of apologize for calling because they called 6 months ago or something. But this has been going on for a long time. They haven't wanted to move house, but they've had to move house, which is like torturous and a nightmare because they're like, what if he comes back? They'll think I've lost. I mean, it's hideous. And sometimes I'm off the line, I'm just weeping and I think I can't do this, you know, because it's so, so, so tough for people. It's really tough, really tough. You know, I always, when people talk about their cats, I always try to imagine their cats are fine and they're just gone somewhere else to another town and they're being treated really well, mm-hmm. being fed milk for, you know, and stuff. And they just decided they've had enough of you and they just got to live happily elsewhere and stuff. Because cats do that, don't they? Mm-hmm. They'll just wander off to somebody else's house.
Yeah.
You know, they can be cruel like that.
I want to keep talking to you, but we do need to at least ask the question that we ask everyone. If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
I would love to be a Dartmoor pony, I think. Yeah, because I love the vibe of a horse, but I wouldn't want to be owned by anyone. I want to be free. And the Dartmoor ponies are free. They're fed well. They graze well, they're admired. People come along and coo over them, but they can stand there looking proud. And it's a good life. It's a good life being a Dartmoor pony.
Who feeds the Dartmoor ponies?
There's workers there, volunteers and stuff, but they're just natural. You know, in the winter, obviously, they'll come along probably with haylage and stuff. But in the summer, you know, eating grass, eating bushes, trees.
Yeah, nice life.
People's picnics, probably.
They're the ones, like, they've got, like, their manes are really fabulous, aren't they?
Yeah.
They've got, like, a 70s Farrah Fawcett blowout going on a lot of the time. Yeah.
That's exactly it. Yeah.
Very cool. They're like little brown ponies, but with gorgeous hair.
Yes, they're gorgeous. Yes.
I love that so much.
Yeah, that's great. That's a great answer.
Also, I love how fast you answered. This was so great. I truly want to have you back because I feel like I have so many more things to talk about. So thank you so much.
For you guys all day. Thank you. Yeah.
I do like the idea of being a horse, you know?
Yeah.
Like I do, it does sound fun.
Especially like a free pony. Sounds
yeah, a wild
nice.
Pony.
Yeah.
Main tossing.
A free pony.
Yeah. Like tossing your hair and like doing what you want.
Yeah.
But that sounds great.
Yeah. Also, I just love talking to Jackie. Really, truly one of us the whole time. I was like,
yeah,
this is, you're the perfect guest. Honestly, you should probably be hosting this podcast. I'm gonna see myself out.
It just everything from the cockatoo rescue,
yes,
to the pet bereavement volunteering. Yeah. I was like, oh, amazing! Jackpot!
Yes.
Thanks so much.
Yeah, it just kept going. There's so many more. I really do want to have her back on because I felt really guilty, like pulling the interview to a close. I was like, I'm not done yet, but
I have so many more questions. I have so much more I want to ask her about.
Yeah.
Also because for me, like, you know, I live in London, mm-hmm. and so when I exit London, I will see people like on the hack and like driving in their little horse and carts and stuff. But it is not an everyday occurrence to me.
No.
Or probably any city dweller.
No.
So I just even to talk about like, you know, the process of doing that and like learning to drive. Like when people talk about learning to drive, you're thinking, you know, they've got their provisional license and they're like behind some terrible Ford Focus trying to, you know. But no, Jackie's up in like a wagon,
yes.
as you call it, Alexis. Steering horses, which is just so cool. And like, I mean, have you done a carriage ride before?
Yeah, I have. They're less weirdly, I mean, they're around in New York. They're around more like you can hop on, but I just
Central Park. And
yeah,
stuff.
Exactly. But they're, I feel like they're less common, like, because, you know, we grew up with horses and I've never considered driving a horse. Like,
wow.
Isn't that strange? Like, it's just less of a, and maybe I'm wrong. Horse people of the States, tell me if it's just like my small pocket of horse people. I think there's something about like being specifically from like the West. It's a lot more like cowboy culture type of horses.
It's cowboys and ranches.
Is 100% correct. And like that's there's less like opportunity to like just take the wagon out, if you will.
But it's like we had this, we were talking about like in our very, when we had Lisa Hannibal mm-hmm. on, we were talking about horses then, that kind of like in where you guys are from, horse girls, the girls with like the big ranches, mm-hmm. who, I don't know, I'm imagining them all wearing their like red cowboy boots,
yes.
and denim on denim.
Oh, yeah.
And yeah. Whereas for me, the horse girls are like, horse and carts, tweed,
mm-hmm.
you know, that's more the vibe. I really want to do that now. I really want to, like learn to drive.
Yeah, same. I don't know where I'm going to
cool
do it.
How cool would that be?
To also everyone should check out Jackie's books, obviously.
Her adult books are crime thriller type books, and then her YA that came out in October of last year, The Haunting of Tyrese Walker, is excellent. It's a spooky atmospheric ghost story. It's very, very good. It's actually been nominated for the Branford Bows,
Whoa.
Which is a prize for your debut children's fiction.
Wow.
So has mine, actually. That is how I know Jackie.
That's so cool.
Yeah, little nom happening.
Cool.
But, she's fabulous, isn't she? She's so cool.
She's so cool. And if you want more from us, you can follow us at Sea Creatures Pod on Twitter and Comfort Creatures Podcast on Instagram and join our Discord. I got to update the link. Because I did, I think I fully figured out how to make it permanent so we don't have to change
it
again.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
join us in Discord and then keep sending us your Ready Pet Goes at comfortcreatures@maximumfun.org. And that's all the things I got.
Oh, we have merch.
Merch. Dang it.
Get our merch. We have mugs, we have t-shirts. Mm-hmm. They're great. I actually finally gave my mum her mug today, nice. Which was really exciting because I hadn't, for some reason I guess like the last few times I've seen her, you've been like out and about. Mm-hmm. So I've not like bought
the mug.
Bring
a mug.
Anyway,
yeah.
She loved it. She loves the mug. She's very excited.
Great. So,
go get our merch, guys.
Yeah. While you're doing that, I've been Alexis B. Preston.
And I've been Ella McLeod.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.